ജയം ശ്രീപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ് ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹർഷിയില പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം ശ്രീല പ്രവിഷ്ടോം വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹർഷിയില പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യശീൽ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേംസഹു ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോവിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരിഗോവർദ്ധാനയ്ക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവാംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശീല പ്രഭുപാദ നമാമി ശ്രീപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസാദ ഭൂതലേശ്വരി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരണി ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ സംസാര സാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗ്രഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധര ഭവാർണവാത് ശ്രീമദ് ഭാഗവതാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാ നാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫലാ സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യഥ പ്രഭോ നാമ സംകീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവപാപ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനം തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യതോന്വയാദിതരതസ് ചാർത്തേഷു അഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാൻ തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തി യത് സൂരയാം തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷ ധാമാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി ധർമ്മ പ്രോജിത കൈതവോത്ര പരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണാം സദാം വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താവത്രയോന്മൂലനം ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനി കൃതേ കിം വാ പരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യ വരുദ്ധ്യതേത്ര കൃതിഭി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭി തക്ഷണാൻ നിഗമകൽപതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുകമുഖാതമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോ രസികാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഃ സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമാ യം പ്രവ്രജന്തം ഹനുഭേദമഭേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈപായനോ വിരഹകാതരമാജ്ജുഹാവ പുത്രേതി തന്മയതയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിം ഹാനതോസ്മി യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖില ശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപമതിതീർഷതാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണ ഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനും ഉപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേ കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തി കളവേണുക്കൊടിദാതൃദാനനെന്തോഹ മമ വാചി വിജംബദാ മുരാരേ മധുരേം ന കണികാപി കാപി കാപി മാഹോം വിഷ്ണോപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമദ് ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിൻ ഹിരി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവി ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യാദേശചാരിണേ ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീണം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശ യാസം ഹരികഥോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദി ഭുവനത്രയം ശ്രീ ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാനവേ നമ. പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദഗീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശ മനിഷം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമീം. കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണും ശ്യാമലോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യ പരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമാം. കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. ഓം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ. ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. സോ after this today's class we will, those who are coming to India, if they could stay back for half an hour or so, then we just want to go through the progress with the booking and all that. Then coming back to Srimad Bhagavatam, we were discussing from Ekadasha Skandam. Ekadasha Skandam, as I mentioned before, because we had a short break, I'll just go back to it a little bit more. Ekadasha Skandam has two main topics discussed, and these are the essence of Ekadasham, particularly this discussion between Navayogis and King Nimi. That is the first six chapters goes with that, and then from seventh chapter onwards, what is known as Krishna's discussions with Uddhava, Uddhavopadesham or Uddhava Gita, in different names it's known, but whatever it is, these are the two main topics in the Ekadasha Skandam. Krishna's discussions with Uddhava, which is known as Uddhavadesham, or Krishna's final instructions to Uddhava before departing from the planet. And secondly, the discussion between King Nimi and the nine yogis, Navayogindras, as they are called, who are the sons of King Rishabhadev. Rishabhadev's children they are. So, how did that happen? Because Vasudev wanted to hear from Sri Narada Maharshi. Vasudev, Krishna's father, Vasudev and Devaki wanted to hear from Sri Narada Maharshi what he should do in life. Imagine, Krishna's father is asking this question. What should I do in my life? He's asking to Narada Maharshi. It was at a point that Krishna himself prompted this from within Vasudev to ask this question from Narada Maharshi. Reason being, at the time of appearance of Krishna, Krishna gave specific instructions to Vasudev, but in spite of that, he could not take it very seriously. Even after Krishna instructing him, Yuvavam putra bhavena brahma bhavena chasakal, it says in the Bhagavatam, treat me as your son, at the same time develop the consciousness in you as though I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are the two instructions from Krishna to Vasudev at the time of appearance in the prison. When Vasudev and Devaki were there, when Krishna appeared, and Vasudev got frightened about Kamsa's arrival, at that time Krishna showed his four-handed form and showed him who he is, and then told Vasudev that Yuvavam putra bhavena brahma bhavena chasako, that treat me as your son, putra bhavena, and also realize that I am that supreme truth, absolute brahma bhavam. Develop that as well inside. But unfortunately, what happened for Vasudeva was that brahma bhavam didn't happen. Only putra bhavam happened throughout life. After all, Krishna is our son. This feeling kept staying in his mind, and Krishna realized that this is not going away. He is still like a happy householder. He is living in his family life. No sign of any detachment, no sign of leaving home, no sign of going to take sannyas, nothing. He is still wanted to live in his family life comfortably. So at that point, Krishna decided to, from inside, prompted him to ask these questions to Sri Narada Maharshi. So this happens, this discussion between Narada Maharshi and Vasudev happens in Dwaraka. At the same time, Narada Maharshi did not tell him straight away everything, oh, this is my view. No, he said that the question what you have asked is important because a similar discussion happened in Tridayugam between King Nimi and the nine yogi, Navayogendras, during a sacrifice that happened in their palace. So I will repeat that, what I heard at that time between the discussions between the King Nimi and the Navayogendras. So that discussion he repeats here in Dwaraka to Vasudev by Sri Narada Maharshi. So that's how it started. And at that point it was told that there were nine yogis were there. So King Nimi started asking the questions one after the other. I'll just go back to all the five, six we have finished so far very briefly. First question was asked by why we are under fear all the time. Why are we feeling this fear all the time in life? This was the question by King Nimi. What should one do? What is his ultimate benefit in life? What should one do in life that he is ultimately benefited from that? Because everyone in this world knows that whatever they are doing here is all worthless at the end. They may say so many things. I built up this institution, that institution. I served my family. I served this relatives, this family. At the end, all that goes away. There is no reward for all that. In other words, they don't feel any happiness from any of these things, any of these activities. And not only that, because of all these kind of activities what we are doing, there's always also this constant fear inside what will happen tomorrow, what will happen day after. Continuous material existence, in other words, it's called. So this question came up, and in answer to that, the first Navayogindra among them, the first yogi who spoke to them, answer was Kavi. Kavi told them, Manye kudaschil bhayamachudasya padambhujobhasana matranityam udhigna bhukte asadalpa bhavad vishwalpana yatranivartadebhi. This was the first verse. If you want to free yourself from fear in this material body and in this existence in this world, there is only one solution to that problem. What is that? Achyudapadambhujobhasanamatranityam. To take to Krishna shelter and serve Krishna wholeheartedly. Achyudapadambhujobhasanamatranityam. On a daily basis, without any non-interruption, throughout life, non-stop service to Krishna. Achyudapadambhujobhasana. Serving Krishna's lotus feet. That is the answer to that question. And why this fear has come? Udigna buddhe asadalpa bhaval yatra alpana. Vishwalpana yatra nivartade bhi. That this fear has come to you only for one reason, and that reason is that you have identified yourself with asat. Asat means what does not exist. If you remember in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna opens Arjuna's eyes with this one point only. That is the point which turned Arjuna completely. Nasade vidyade bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sada, ubhayor avidrishtantam stanayor tatodarshibhi. Krishna immediately made Arjuna realize that what is sat, what actually exists, will always exist. You cannot destroy it. And what doesn't exist, will never exist forever. You see, this is an important statement from Krishna, which opened Arjuna's eyes. People talk about killing each other, isn't it? They say, we killed them and they killed us and this. Krishna is saying, you can't kill anybody. Nobody can kill you either. This one point Krishna is stressing in the Bhagavad Gita, and there is elaborate commentaries on this by great acharyas. Nasade vidyade bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sada, ubhayor abhidrishtvandam stanayor tatvadarshibi, Krishna says. And it is the same thing here. Udigna buddhe asadalpa bhaval. If you identify with asat, which is not the truth, which is temporary, which is material, and which has come from asat, that asat, asat buddhi, asadalpa bhaval, if you think that asat as the truth and identify with that, vishwalpana yatra nivartadebhi, there is no question of freedom from fear. You have to experience fear along with that. Why? Because you are catching hold of something which is temporary. And that temporary experience of that particular thing, that experience we discussed before, how it happens. It happens in 2-3 different ways. Some people put their faith in their assets. Some people put their faith in the society, in the friends and relatives and all that. They think they will protect me. Both are assets. The wealth is assets. the friends and relatives, that is also asat. And what else do? They put their faith in their own ability of doing karma, and I'll escape from all these problems. In this way, in these three things, they put their faith in, and that is all asat. That's all asat. So long as one takes shelter of asat, Kavi Maharshi says here that he has to go through this fear of material existence. In other words, the sooner we get out of this asadbhavam, asadbhavam means this relationship with the asat and going back to the sat, which is soul, the soul. This is why self-realization is given so much importance. Why is self-realization? It's not that it's just that, oh, I want to understand what I am. No, not only that. It is to get out of this false conceptions we have accumulated in different bodies, in different forms, and we still continue to exist in that way. So in order to free from that and come to the sat, to the truth, the reality. That's why in Vedic philosophy, you don't say you preach religion to others. No. Vedic philosophy means inquiring after the truth. That's the definition in the Vedic culture. In the Vedic culture, the answer is satyanveshanam, inquiring after the truth. This is why Vedic philosophy means. Vedic philosophy doesn't teach us, oh, you have to get so many people into this, so many people into that. That is all good, but that's not the goal of ultimate life, existence in this world. Existence in this world is only one purpose, to realize what the truth is. What is the truth? Satyanveshanam, inquiring after the satyam, the truth. So therefore, here you'll see that first question was answered by Kavi Maharshi like this. Immediately when he said like that, King Nimi asked question back to him, back to the Navayogi, saying that if it is like that, who are these people who are practicing this, and how do you know that they are the ones who are following in that direction? In answer to that, Hari Maharshi answers the second question, the symptoms of a devotee. It is the devotee who follows these things. And devotee is one who is inquiring after the truth. And their description is given there. Three categories of devotees we have discussed. Uttamam, Prakritam, Madhyamam. And how they are identified. All these things we have seen. And in order to do that, they also said that you have to practice what is known as Bhagavata Dharma. Bhagavata Dharma means nothing but Krishna consciousness. That is what Bhagavata Dharma means. So practicing Bhagavata Dharma is the answer to this problem, to this question. So Bhagavata Dharma was discussed here, namely Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnur Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam. The nine processes which Prahlada has spoken in the seventh canto. So the same thing was repeated by Hari Maharshi, that should be practiced in order to get yourself out of this fear. And that is what the devotees do. So when Hari Maharshi said these things to him, to King Nimi, King Nimi said, if it is like that, why is that all the people in this world not practicing it? It's a very genuine question, isn't it? If it is so simple that it is only you have to execute this nine process of devotional service, why is not everybody not doing it? This question comes up. In answer to that, the answer was given by who? Andarisha. Andarisha spoke, isn't it? Kavi Hari Andarisha. Andarisha spoke answer to that. Andarisha told him that there is one thing called Maya. And that Maya's nature is two things, two ways it works. One is known as the Avaranam and Vikshepam. Two things. We talked about that while discussing Andarisha's answer to that. Avaranam and Vikshepam. Covering potency and deluding potency. These are what is translated in English. Avarana means to make you see things in this world with not exactly in its true nature. For example, so many things we are aspiring after in this world, we find fruitless when you get it. After some time you find it's not worthwhile. We have struggled so long for so much to acquire something in this world. Then you see the transitory nature of that particular object, either it is property or it's cash or it's bank balance, whatever it is, it may be, or even fame in this world, or even popularity, whatever that you are searching after in this world, you realize it that after you acquire it, it has no value. And not only that, whatever you thought before acquiring it, that it is going to be bring this happiness, you realize it doesn't exist in there. So then that means you leave that and then you go for the next one. isn't it? This is the way Maya keeps us going. That's called avaranam. Avaranam means this covering potency, not revealing its true identity to us. That means when you see an object and you want to acquire it in this lifetime, and you work so many years very hard to get it, that means not knowing that that object is not going to give you happiness. You are not able to recognize it while working for it. It's only after many years you realize it was all a waste of time. It happens to many, many people. Many instances, we all have knowledge of that. So this is called avaranam. Not revealing the true nature. Not able to understand the true identity of it. This is avaranam. Whichever means, instead that, it will bring you some other experience of it. Something what you know is going to be a problem. Not knowing that, thinking that it is going to bring happiness. You acquire it, and on the other hand, it brings some unhappiness to you later. Everything in this material world is like that. All temporary and all going to cause a lot of problems. Anyway, this is avaranam and vichevam exist in all levels, and that is called Maya. Maya's vaicham. Agadina gadana padiyasi Maya. Nobody can define what Maya is. And we have seen all that when we discussed about Avirhotra's reply to King Nimi. So, Andariksha. Andariksha was the one who spoke this. Andariksha was the one who spoke about Maya. So when King Nimi asked why people don't take to Krishna consciousness, Andariksha replied, it is because of Maya. Kavi Hari Andarikshan. Then, if it is like that, what should one do? How can one get over this Maya? How can one get over this Maya? This question has come up at that time. And that answer was, who has spoken answer to that? Kavi Hari Andarikshan Prabuddha. Prabuddha means one who has woken up from Maya. He answered that question very well. How was his answer? He said, Tasmad Gurum Prabhadyeda Jityasu Shreyamuttamam Shabde Parechanishnadam Brahmani Upashama Shreyam. That was the answer. Tasmad, therefore, Gurum Prabhadyeda, one should approach a guru. Jityasu, one who has that desire inside. You see, first to come to this point itself is very difficult, isn't it? To understand that there is a thing called Maya, and to accept that I am in Maya, and to accept that I have to get out of this Maya. All these are stages before coming to a guru. People think that they should approach a guru because somebody else has told you to go to a guru. That is not how you do that. The stages are mentioned there. Tasmal gurum prabhadyeda. He should become a jijnyasu first. Jijnyasu means that he should have understood and analyzed this problem in life and himself about this existence in this world enough that he should know that I need to get out of this situation. I have to be that burning desire inside to be free for yourself from the material existence. That's what takes one to a spiritual master. Tasmal gurum prabhadyeda. Therefore, one should surrender to a guru. He says, surrender to a guru. Tasmal gurum prabhadyeda. What kind of surrender? Who should do? Jityasu. He should be jityasu. In other words, he should be very, very serious about spiritual life. That jityasa should be there inside. Shreyam uttamam shabde pareja nishnadam brahmani upashama ashrayam. The main qualification for that person is shabde brahmani nishnadam. Pare Brahmani Nishnadam. The spiritual master one approaches should not be an ordinary person. This is the Vedic injunction. He should be a highly learned person, extremely learned and highly scholarly. These are his qualities. Two things he should have. Shabde Brahmani Nishnadam. He should have realized the truth, the sound or the holy name. He should have realized that. Shabde Brahmani Nishnadam. What else? Pare Brahmani Nishnadam. He should also be such a person that he is situated on the highest transcendental plane. There is no question of falling back from that at any point in time. By his strong acceptance of the truth, acceptance of the Vedic authority, strong training, strong philosophical, deeper understanding and study of the Shastram, highly learned, such a person, Shabde Parejanishnadam Brahmani Upashamashrayam. That person who has taken complete shelter of Krishna in all aspects, such a guru one should approach. Why I'm saying all this thing is, if you look back into the history, you will see some of the people, how long, how much time they took before they approached the spiritual master. And when they approached the spiritual master, what they had to go through at that time. To give you a story, incident, what happened. About 200 years ago, this incident happened. There was a great personality called Tathuraya and his uncle, that means his father's younger brother. They studied the Shastram together. They studied all the scriptures together. These two personalities, they studied so well everything, but they couldn't surrender to anyone. This was their main problem. They couldn't surrender to anyone. And they became so experts at it. What they used to do, two of them used to go to all the big meetings of the scholars, meetings in the assemblies of the kings, and wherever there was an opportunity to discuss Shastram or the scriptures, they'll go there. And they will engage in debate with everybody there. They'll engage in debate with everyone. And after the debate, they'll beat everyone. They will beat everybody in the debate, because both of them were extremely sharp in intelligence and excellent memory also of the Shastra. Knowledge was so good. So this carried on for a long time. Like this, everywhere they'll go and they'll win and they'll come back with the presence. But after some time, it started coming to them, this is all useless. To go and win, it's just like going and winning in a competition somewhere. It doesn't last very long, isn't it? After you have won something, it lasts for a few days and then you'll look for the next competition. So something like that. Because of studying Shastram also, these two have acquired a very high degree of the Shastric knowledge. But at the same time, they never surrendered to a guru at any time. Because what used to happen was, they will go to someone to surrender. And as soon as they go there, immediately a discussion starts. Discussion starts and these two together will argue and discuss so much in depth that he could not surrender at the end. Surrender is only possible to a higher position from a lower position, isn't it? If you go to a higher position and want to surrender to a lower level, that's not possible. The person to whom you are surrendering, he should be situated on a much higher platform than you. Otherwise, you can't surrender to him. The surrender process is not so simple as we make it or as we take it like that. The surrender process do involve a lot of deeper understanding of it before we surrender to somebody. When does one surrender? And what conditions does one surrender? One surrender in certain circumstances. When one understands that spiritual knowledge and spiritual realization won't come by senses, by mind, by intelligence. These three things. Neither by mind, nor by senses, nor by intelligence. The senses, you can bring them under control somehow. Okay, by strong austerities, controlling eating, controlling sleeping, and controlling the bodily activities, you can keep the senses somewhat under control. That is possible. Many, many yogis do that, isn't it? Yamam, Niyamam, these are meant for that. Yamam, Niyamam, Asanam, Pranayamam, Pratyaharam, they are all to help to control the senses. The mind is difficult, more difficult than the senses. The mind will always bring doubts inside. Actually, strictly speaking, when the doubts that's coming inside is nothing but a disease of the mind. You must understand this, because in the spiritual life, all these questions what people pose about spirituality, all this has no meaning. Shastram in itself is truth. What does spiritual knowledge mean? Spiritual knowledge means Krishna. Krishna and spiritual knowledge is not different. And when we start thinking that Krishna is somewhat different than the knowledge, and Krishna is identical, they are exactly the same. And when you understand Krishna, you have realized the truth. There is no more further discussions about it required. So it's not something which you can acquire by discussion. It's not something which you can inquire by clarifying some doubts. So the mind, which has by very nature creates doubts inside, or samshayam or doubting is a very nature of the mind. And this doubting is nothing but a disease of the mind. As soon as the mind comes under control, the doubt also stops. That's why in the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look very carefully, in the second chapter of the first canto, what did Vedavyasa say? Sudha Goswami says to Shravanagrashi, Vidyadehadaya Granthi ഛിദ്യന്തി സർവ സംശയാഃ. സർവ സംശയം, ഓൾ ഡൗട്ട്സ് ആർ ഗോൺ, ഹാസ് ടു ഗോ, ബിക്കോസ് വൈ അപ്രോച്ചിങ് കൃഷ്ണ യു കാൻ ഗോ വിത്ത് ഡൗട്ട്സ്. ഡൗട്ട്സ് ഈസ് നോ മീനിങ് ദർ. യു ആർ ടോക്കിംഗ് അബൌട്ട് ദ അബ്സൊല്യൂട്ട് ട്രൂത്ത്. ഹൂ ഇസ് ദ കോസ് ഓഫ് ഓൾ കോസസ്? ഈശ്വര പരമകൃഷ്ണ സച്ചിദാനന്ദ വിഗ്രഹം അനാദിർ ആദിർ ഗോവിന്ദം സർവകാരണ കാരണം. എവറിത്തിങ് ഹാസ് കം ഫ്രം ഹിം. ആൻഡ് വാട്ട് പോയിന്റ് ഈസ് ദർ ഡൗട്ടിംഗ് അബൌട്ട് ഇറ്റ്? സോ ഹിയർ വിദ്യതേ ഹൃദയ ഗ്രന്ഥി ഛിദ്യന്തേ സർവ സംശയാ ക്ഷീയന്തേ ചാസ്യ കർമാണി കൃഷ്ണമേവാത്മനീശ്വരേ. വെൻ ഓൾ ഡൗട്ട്സ് ആർ ക്ലിയർഡ് അപ്പ് and this hriday granthi or the attachment to material existence and body goes away, kshiyande chasya karmani, all karma also comes to an end. And what happens then? Drishtomevaatmanishware, inside you will see Krishna there sitting there happily and showing us what is the truth. That's what will happen. This is the real, this is spoken in the first canto, second chapter, Sudha Goswami saying to Shaunaka Rishi in the Navisharanyam. So there itself, in the beginning of Bhagavatam itself, he has made it very clear. Vidyade hridaya granthi. Hridaya granthi has to break. And that vidyade, that breakage happens. Then, chidyande sarva samshayaha. All samshayam doubts has to go. Kshiyande chasya karmani. All karma has to finish. Karma also has to finish. Drishtame evalpani ishware. When you start seeing Krishna inside, this is what will happen. That all these things would have gone by then. So, as long as those three are existing, the chances of seeing him inside is also very little. So, having come to that, so here what happened was that the mind is that problem. I was talking about the mind. Mind won't allow you to surrender. It'll keep bringing doubts after doubts after doubts. Normally, what happens is, if you have came across a great devotee or a great jnani, great devotee or a great jnani, doubts won't come up inside. It will stay there. It won't come up. There are examples in the history. In the very history of Tathuraya itself, these things have happened. I'll come to that later. So, mind is such a thing. It is only creating doubts. Why? Because of false ego inside. Ahankaram is behind it. As soon as ahankaram came, mind came, intelligence developed, senses start working, all this illusion of maya creates all these the different doubts in the mind, and we start keep asking questions. Sometimes the way people go after asking questions, it gives the impression that as though if all these questions are answered, they will be self-realized straight away. But doesn't happen like that. They gets more trouble. After answering all the questions, the doubt gets worse. This is what most of the time it happens. So, clarifying in that way is not the answer. So, mind is like that. Now you come back to intelligence, in what intelligence does. Some people, when they become very intelligent, they can't do anything about it. They cannot stop it. They have to debate. They have to tarkam. Tarkam will start. Tarkam means arguments will come out from them. No matter what you tell them, they cannot accept it. Because they will find something else to overcome or counteract to that. So, mind, intelligence and the senses, they all have no value when it comes to realizing the truth. They are all useless. They have no help at all. If you try to understand Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita through these three mediums, you will fail. You won't get there. That is why Krishna is making it very clear in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam as well as in the Bhagavad Gita that the truth is beyond all these things. These are all there in the body and they are functioning because of the presence of the soul behind it. It is the soul that is illuminating them and giving them this energy, ability to function. So, but when you come to spiritual platform, they have to go behind. So, our Tathuraya has this problem. He could not surrender to anyone. Why? Because of this intelligence. High intelligence, knows everything, studied everything, couldn't surrender. Wherever he goes, he will meet someone, he will decide to go and surrender to him. But as soon as the discussion starts, immediately he realizes he does not know what I know about it. What do you do? If a disciple comes to a guru and disciple realizes that I know better than what he knows, then what will the guru do? So sometimes guru avoids the disciple, he is a trouble, so leave him alone. So Sometimes the disciple says, he doesn't know anything, I'm not going to waste my time with him. So then they go two different ways. This happens. It's not happened only in here, in this history, our history. It has happened from time immemorial. This has been going on. So our Tatvayaya had the same, exactly the same problem. Extremely intelligent, can't surrender anywhere. So, but by now, these two, Tatvayaya and his uncle, they decided that this is no good. We have to surrender to the spiritual master. Because that is a mandatory requirement in the Shastram. But because they were so learned, they know how what a spiritual master should be and how to surrender to him. This was known to him. So together they met in one place and they said to each other, they made an agreement to each other, you go in one way and we will not travel together anymore. You go in one direction, I'll go in another direction. And for 1 year, we will go on our own. I will inquire for some, look for a spiritual master where I can surrender, and you also go and do the same thing. And let's see, after 1 year, we will meet together again, exactly at the same place where we are parting now. That was in the near the seashore under a banyan tree. They decided that place to come back and meet each other. So Tatvayaya's uncle, he was called Swarupananda Saraswati, that was his name. Swarupananda Saraswati went in one direction, Tatvayaya went in another direction. For one whole year, Tatvayaya went everywhere. Tatvayaya couldn't find anyone whom he could surrender. He was searching very seriously. He was seriously searching. And he found wherever he went, the same problem will come. They'll start discussion. As soon as discussion starts, because everything is in his head, the whole thing is stored up here, it starts coming out from there. And most of the spiritual masters avoid when you get a disciple like that, what to do with him. So he says, all right, Hare Krishna, go. Send him off from there. And he left. Tatvayaya went after this. But Swarupananda, what happened to him was, fortunately, he met a great yogi in his process. And he had a little bit more maturity in him that he decided to take his shelter and surrender unto him. So Swarupananda Saraswati surrendered to this yogi. Tatvayaya didn't make it. But after 1 year, both these personalities, uncle and the nephew, they met again at the same place. They came back and met at the same place. When they met with each other, both asked, Tatvayaya asked his uncle what happened. Swarupananda Saraswati told him, I have solved my problem. I have found a person whom I could surrender. I have taken his shelter and I am under his guidance now and nothing bothers me anymore. Because spiritual knowledge, whatever you have studied from the book, if that knowledge is not working inside, Shastram calls it in two different names. That is, the knowledge that you acquire from the books, it goes into the head, isn't it? And that is called paroksham. Paroksham means that has been acquired from the textbooks and which is stored in the memory and it is utilized by the intelligence. It only the intelligence is helping to understand that. When it becomes an experience in within you, a blissful experience, all that spiritual truth, what you have theoretically studied, I am not this body. You have theoretically studied that that I am spirit soul. So many things, what you have acquired from the Shastram, theoretically, if it remains as a theory, what use is there from that? There is no use of it, is there? There is no use at all. So when it stays in that condition, it is called paroksham. It's called paroksham. When that knowledge manifests and you start experiencing it and you change yourself and experiencing that knowledge, it is called aparoksham. Aparoksha anubhuti, it's called. Anubhuti means blissful experience. The blissfulness comes at that time. Otherwise there is no bliss. When you have studied theoretically and it has stayed there in paroksham stage, there is no bliss there, is there? Because bliss comes when you realize the truth. Otherwise there is no bliss. So aparoksham is that stage when you are actually experiencing that. Aparoksha anubhuti it is called. There are books even written about that. Jnani studied all these things. Aparoksha anubhuti they call it. So anyway, our Tatvayaya came and told Swarupananda Saraswati, his uncle, that I looked for 1 year, I didn't happen anything, but for me, now the problem is solved, Swarupananda Saraswati said. At that point, Tathuraya wanted to surrender to Swarupananda Saraswati because he was finding it very helpless. He had a lot of respect for his uncle because he was very learned, as much as he was, and even more. So he could even surrender to Swarupananda Saraswati. But as soon as Tathuraya sat there and started discussion, he started asking such questions again to Swarupananda Saraswati. So uncle also started finding it very difficult. And he understood the situation with Tathuraya. And he said to Tathuraya, there is only one hope now. There is only one choice you have left with. Just go back and jump in the sea and kill yourself. This was the instruction from the uncle to the nephew. Tathuraya was told by Swarupananda Saraswati, just go back, jump into the sea and kill yourself. Why? Because Swarupananda Saraswati realized this man has a serious problems with his intelligence. The intelligence was causing the problem in realizing the self. You see, that for some people it's the mind, for some people it's the intelligence. People who are on a very lower level, for them it's the senses. Do you see the following, how it happens? Some people, senses are the problem. That disturbs them so much that they can't make progress spiritually. For some people, the mind is the problem. For some others, the intelligence is the problem. All three are obstacles in this path on spiritual life. Because if you look into the Upanishads and the Puranas and everywhere, you will find when the absolute truth is realized, you don't require logic and reasoning after that. It's something to be realized. That's why it's called self-realization. Tathuraya walked back to the sea, to jump into the sea to kill himself. That's what he thought. He has no hope anymore left. And he decided to go and jump into the sea. While walking back into the sea, Swarupananda Saraswati, his uncle, told one of his disciples, write down what he is saying while he is walking back to the sea. So by Krishna's grace, at that point, from inside, Krishna told him to surrender properly and control the intelligence to a very high degree. Put the brake on the intelligence. At that point, the intelligence got clearer. Do you know what all they have done before that? This Tathuraya, when his intelligence he could not control, there are different ways in Ayurveda to restrict your intelligence. One of the ways is, you know this castor oil, castor. They take castor or castor tree, the nuts, and they grind it and make it a paste. And they put it on the head all around and make a small kind of a tank. And they pour castor oil inside and keep it there for a long time. If you do that, your intelligence will become a little bit dull. You'll become dull. In order to bring the intelligence down, you have to do that. Tathuraya did that even. Then, with urad dal, you know the urad dal. Urad dal also brings your intelligence down. Therefore, urad dal is not considered very good from that point of view. So urad dal, they use it for covering the head after making a paste of urad dal. Third, they were eating rice which was cooked 2 days ago. Old rice, cooked old. And because already rice cooked after 3 hours, it's older, it's not considered to be good for eating. So he was eating this rice which was cooked 2 days earlier. And that way he was making himself feeling nothing worked for him. In spite of all this, Tathuraya could not resist. His intelligence was coming out all the time. And at the end, when Tathuraya realized that at that, you will never know when these things will happen in life. For Tathuraya, it happened at that point. At the last minute, Krishna from inside changed his way of thinking. He realized it, this process is not good anymore. I should surrender to my uncle or Swarupananda Saraswati and take his shelter. And from that day onwards, Tathuraya's attitude changed in spiritual life. He became much more a spiritual personality. Up to that time, it was all in the intelligence. Intelligence was driving everything. But when you realize the futility of all these things, and he realizes the importance of realizing the self, and experiencing that, it became the priority for him in life. So after that, what happened was, in their lives, if you read their history, you will know what happened. This is an incident which happened roughly about 200 years ago. Tathuraya started glorifying his spiritual master. Before that, he couldn't glorify anyone. He was finding it very difficult. But now he was glorifying his spiritual master in such a elegant language that in big assemblies he used to glorify him. And whenever he glorified, sometimes there was a system in Sanskrit language to write certain verses in a particular pattern. He used to do that. And when he did that, many others who were present in the assembly, they were questioning Tattvaraya how he could do that. First of all, to Swarupananda Saraswati, it was only used to glorify big, powerful emperors and kings who have invaded other land and brought them under control and such powerful personalities. But here, Tattvaraya was doing that to Swarupananda Saraswati. So there was a lot of objection in the assembly of the scholars. Everybody started objecting that. They started saying to him, what you have done is not true, this, that and the other. So Tattvaraya said to them, look, if you have any doubts about what I have written, all I can do is to bring that personality here and you can clarify your questions from him. You can clarify your questions from him. So after a long discussion, Tattvaraya goes and brings Swarupananda Saraswati into the assembly where he was questioned by many people about the validity of what he has written. When Swarupananda Saraswati walked into the assembly and sat there willing to answer the questions what they had, nobody had any question. Nobody had any question. He sat there for an hour, sat there for a couple of hours, 3 hours, whole day he sat there. Nobody had any question to ask. What is the reason behind it? The reason is this. In the assembly of the realized souls, in the assembly of great jnanis, or highly advanced devotees of great personalities, our mind automatically stay quiet. It won't bring these doubts up. And that depends on the greatness of that personality. A great personality in his presence, you won't be able to ask any question. Because you will realize that this person who is sitting in front of me, he is already realized and gone away from us. I am conditioned because of my conditioning. All these doubts are coming up and there is no need to ask any questions. My duty is to surrender unto him. This realization will come. Without this realization, if you simply surrender and if you do, these doubts will also come along all the time about everything. All doubts will keep following. So while surrendering, these are very important factors. That's why in the ancient times, this surrendering and all that was not done in a very casual way. It was done with great seriousness. And when they surrendered with proper relationship and with proper realization from that. That normally, if you will know that to whom when you surrender, there is no more questions to ask. There is no more questions to ask. There is no more doubts coming anymore. Because in his presence, the very presence of that person is enough to clear all the doubts in you. In fact, in the Puranams, there is a beautiful description about this. When four Kumara, Sanaga, Sananda, Sanadana and Sanat Kumara, these four personalities, they wanted to discuss Shastram. So what did they do? They went to Lord Brahma first. When they went to Lord Brahma, they are his children, right? Brahma's children are the Manasaputras. They are called, come from Brahma's mind, these four Kumaras. Kumaras goes there and Kumaras see Brahma and they realize that this Brahma is also not so pure as he claims he is. Brahma's relationship with Saraswati was a little bit causing problem for them. So they said, leave him alone, let him carry on with his business. So he leaves Brahma and goes away from there. Then he goes to see Lord Vishnu. And there also, he sees Lord Vishnu is also not very renounced that way. Mahalakshmi is always there serving him. He is living like a good householder. What can I learn from a householder? This was the Kumara's mind. Kumara's changed him mood. Then they go to Lord Shiva also. What did they see? That was worse what they happened there. When they went to Lord Shiva is sitting there with Shri Parvati on the lap and discussing Shastram with others. So Kumara says, this is also not the right personality whom we can discuss the absolute truth. So you can imagine, personalities like Kumaras, they are not ordinary souls in the creation. They are elder brother to Lord Shiva, isn't it? Although by size they are small, they are older than and 5 or 6 year old. They appear all the time like that. But by age, they are much older than Lord Shiva even. So they say, if here also we can't, we can't do anything. And at that time, Sri Parvati says to Lord Shiva that those four brothers, your four brothers, they are going away. Only one reason, I don't think they are satisfied with the way we are conducting. And that is when Lord Shiva takes another form, called as Dakshinamurti. And in that form, he instructs them. And you should see that there is a special way that is instruction. Four Kumaras sitting there in front of Lord Shiva, taking spiritual instructions from Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is not speaking one word, keeping quiet. Four Kumaras not asking one question. All doubts are cleared. How is that? All doubts are cleared mutually. Why? Because Kumaras are concerned. The very presence of Lord Shiva in that form as Dakshinamurti, where he instructed them, was sufficient for them. Very presence has cleared everything inside. So spiritual realization and spiritual knowledge, how it manifests in a person, is not under our control. It's not under our control. Higher authorities, higher law, our purity, our surrender, many, many things comes into that. That is when the spiritual knowledge starts showing its true form. Up to that time, it's all theoretical. I've read this in the Bhagavatam, I've read that in the Bhagavatam, I've discussed this, I've discussed that, but nothing has changed inside. But spiritual knowledge, when it comes in that way, that actually shows its purity and its power and its strength. Everything comes out in one lot. So, this is why I was saying all these things was Tasmal Gurum Prabhadyeda Jinyasu Shreyam Uttamam Shabde Pareja Nishnadam Brahman Yugashama Shreyam. This one verse is the expanded of form is all these things. This one verse is carrying all these things along with it. Tasmal Gurum Prabhadyeda Jinyasu Shreyam Uttamam Shabde Pareja Nishnadam Brahman Yugashama Shreyam. This was the instruction from who? Kavi Hari Andarikshan Prabuddha. Prabuddha gave this instruction to whom? To King Nimi. So then what happened was, when he heard all these things, King Nimi got another doubt. King Nimi says, what did he say? Whom Kavi Hari Andarikshan Prabuddha. Then he said that when Prabuddha said, by approaching a spiritual master and taking instructions from him, realize the truth, he said, then the question came from King Nimi, what is the truth? What is the truth? That truth is the one, what is the truth, was spoken by who? Pipalayana. Pipalayana spoke the truth afterwards. What's that truth? So you can see that there's about six verses in there talking about what is that truth. Isn't it? Pipalayana Vacha, you can see, we talked about it in detail earlier, that we said that what is that truth? Truth is Narayana, Krishna. That truth, nature of the truth he discussed. How did he discuss the nature of the truth? He said, Stithulbhavam pralaya hedura hedurasya, that Stithi ulbhavam pralayam, in all three states, which is being caused by whom? For example, Siddhi. It is by Krishna, because of Krishna's desire, or due to Krishna, you can say that we were all born, we were created. All of us were created because Krishna desired. It is because of Krishna's desire that we all exist. So, Siddhi, Ulbhavam and Siddhi. Ulbhavam means our origin. Not only us, living entities, the whole material creation has come because of Krishna's desire. That's why Ulbhavam. Sthiti Ulbhavam Pralayam. So Ulbhavam, or the creation, is only due to Krishna's desire. Krishna is the cause behind it. Then all what he has created is sustained and maintained by his desire. Only because of that we all live in this world and we are all existing still. And all this material creation exists because of that. So that is called Sthiti. And again, he says, only when Krishna desires, all these things goes back to him again. Pralaya hedu ahedu. Pralayam. Pralayam means devastation. So devastation happens and we all finish up our this change of bodies and everything, and eventually we go back to Krishna. So if you look in the Chadashlogi Bhagavatam, also the same thing says. Aham eva sameva agre. All that is about that. So Pipalayana Maharshi in six verses spoke about the importance of realizing what the truth is, that's Narayana, he says. Narayana is the word Paramatma. Narayana Vidhanasya, the word verse is like that. That what is called the truth is Narayana, and Narayana description is given like this in the Pipalayana Maharshi statement. So when Pipalayana answered this, we have gone through all these things before. I'm just briefly touching and going away in order to bring that memory back. That Pipalayana Maharshi said like this about Narayana, and at that time, Kavi Hari Andarishan Prabodha Pipalayanan, the question came up when Narayana was talked about how should one should go to Narayana. How can one get back to Narayana? Because once you know that you come from Narayana, you are living here due to Narayana, and you will eventually go back to Narayana, and you know that Narayana is the truth, everything else is temporary in between, how to go back to Narayana? That question came up. And it is an answer to that, what we discussed, who answered that question? Drumila answered that question, isn't it? Drumila, Avirhotra, and Drumila answered that question. So, while discussing, what did Drumila say? Drumila said that for this purpose, Narayana has taken so many incarnations. So many incarnations. Dashavataram, Malsyam, Kurmam, Varaham, Narsimham, Vamanam, Parashuraman, Shriraman, Balaram, all these different incarnations Krishna has taken in order that we could worship Him in whichever form we are fond of. Whichever form we like to worship Him, we can worship Him. That's why He has taken these different forms, He said. But if you remember, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while discussing this part, Drumila Maharshi only talked about Naranarayana Avataram particularly. Very seriously He spoke about Naranarayana Maharshi's incarnations. What was the reason for that? You have to know, because Naranarayana incarnation generally is not discussed in the Bhagavatam earlier so much. In the fourth canto, when we talked about Naranarayana appearance, it's only a few verses. Unlike the incarnation of Nrsimha or Parashurama or even Lord Ramachandra, they are all discussed in many, many chapters, isn't it? But this incarnation of Naranarayana Maharshis was not discussed at length there. But in this, while Drumila was answering, Drumila didn't discuss any other incarnation in detail, but Naranarayana Maharshi's incarnation was discussed in detail. That's interesting to note there. You see, when the sages talk, they talk with a lot of things behind it. They don't just speak something without any meaning or without any serious reason behind it. Reason for that was, Naranarayana Maharshi's particular appearance has a very special significance. The significance is this, that in that incarnation, He showed one important thing for a devotee. What was that? How to get over lust and anger. These are the two major problems, isn't it? In every one of us, we have these two very, very difficult things. Of course, there are three things, lust, anger and greed, Krishna says. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has given these three things important. What are they? Lust, anger and greed. Three things Krishna says. But Naranarayana Maharshi particularly showed in that incarnation how they have won over lust and anger, the two difficult things. Now, if you take these three things, which is the most difficult one? Which is the most difficult one? Anger. Anger is the most difficult one. Do you know why it is the most difficult one? I'll tell you why. You see, lust and anger and greed, if you take three things. In lust, in ignorance, you have done something in lust. Lusty condition, yeah? In the lusty mood, man or woman, doesn't matter. They engage in some relationship. And when they come out of it, they felt that it was wrong for them to do it. But whatever it is, some pleasure has experienced in that lusty conditions, right? It doesn't feel that bad after the experience also. You go through that experience and it's forgotten after a while. In greed, in other words, after executing a particular activity, even while experiencing lusty conditions in the mind, there is still some pleasure you experience from that.
some kind of pleasure, you are experiencing that. That's why you are willing to take that chance and go out of control and do things whatever that was you think is okay to do it. So lust has that advantage. In other words, there is some benefit from that you still relish even after the lusty experience. If you come to greed, the same thing, isn't it? In greed also, you were greedy after something. You worked very hard for it. You got it. After getting it, you felt that I was very greedy and I was working for it in a very greedy nature way. The greed was inside, say, gambling or whatever it is you've done in greed. And when you got the result, you feel still some happiness from that. Okay, it was greed inside. So what, he say? You will say like that, isn't it? For example, say you want to take a lottery ticket. Everybody tells you don't take lottery ticket. You took the lottery ticket and you got 10 million pounds. Would you say that, oh, I don't want it? You won't say that, would you? You will say, I'll give 5 million to Krishna, keep 5 million. And still, I'll get rid of something. I need money also to live in this world. You'll find some logic to justify. We are not that pure devotees that we'll hand over 10 million back to the... Who runs the lottery? To them. Yeah. And tell them, look, I follow this for regulatory principles, so you keep your money back. I don't want it. We don't say that, do we? We won't do that. Why? Because there is some pleasure in that. In that, greed also. But anger is different. Anger is such that you go out of control, and when after the anger has subsided, cooled down, you feel you shouldn't have done it. It always happens. You feel you shouldn't have gone out of control like that. Because there was no happiness from that anger. Nobody gets any happiness getting angry with somebody on anything. There's no happiness at all. It's just that at that particular point in time, you couldn't do anything. You have completely lost it and gone out. In the Shastram, there are very, very clear examples to show this. Our Vishwamitra Maharshi, what he did once was, he went to the north in the Himalayas and he performed very severe penances. Extremely severe penances. Indra woke up, sent Menaka there to wake him up. Menaka went there singing, dancing and all activities she started. Vishwamitra woke up. What happened? What happened? Shakuntala was born. That's all. That was the result. Shakuntala was born from that. And after that, Vishwamitra realized all that austerities and penances he has performed, all the strength what he has acquired has gone with that. That is how it is. Everything what you acquire through austerities and penances, the strength what you have gone from that is lost straight away. Through Menaka that was gone and Shakuntala was born. So this time, what did Vishwamitra decide? Vishwamitra decided, I'm not going there, I go to the south now, he said. He went there. He went there and this time he made himself very sure that he will not get affected by lust anymore. So he started again performing penances and started very seriously. He was executing his spiritual activities. Devendra decided this time, asked again Menaka to go. Menaka said, no, I'm not going this time. Send somebody else, he said. Said to him, all right. He said to Rambha then, Rambha, you go now. So Indra says to Rambha to go. The Rambha says, all right, I'll go. So Rambha comes and starts dancing in front of Vishwamitra. Knowing very well, she just wants to disturb Vishwamitra's mind, that concentration and single-minded, which was focused very much on the in his meditations. Again, when he saw Rambha woke up, hearing the music and the dancing, everything, and got very angry with Rambha. This time he was so prepared that earlier, due to lust, he lost it. But here, he got so angry with Rambha and cursed her, you become a rock there now. And Rambha had to stay as a rock for a long time. And why, what happened now? All that austerity and strength what he had went through the anger this time. At least there he had a relationship with Menaka. Here even that didn't happen. So there also the whole thing was gone. So why we are saying all these things is that kamam, lobham, krodham, these are qualities in us. And Naranarayana Maharshi has won all these three things in one stretch. How did he win? when Indra sent all the celestial women to disturb Naranarayana Maharshi, not knowing who he was, Naranarayana Maharshi started smiling at Indra's stupidity. There is a verse in the Bhagavatam, if you take that verse and read it, you will see how it is put forward in the Bhagavatam by the by Sukadeva Goswami. It's a beautiful presentation there. If you look into the chapter, we were talking about Rodan Pipalaina. Yeah, Drumila, isn't it? So Drumila says there in that verse, I will look at that verse carefully. Yeah, verse number 11 in chapter 4, verse 11. Verse 11, chapter 4. What did he say? Drumila says, Kshutral gunamarida jaihya shaisnyam asmana para jaladhi aditirya kechit krothasya yandhi vibhalasya vasham pade gormajjandi duscharatavascha mrudhol srajandi. Then he says here, Kshutratrikala gunamaruda jaihya shaisnyam asmana para jaladhi adidhirya kechil krothasya yandhi vibhalasya vasham pade gorma jandi duscharatavascha prudhol srajandi. Hunger, thirst, cold weather, heat, rain, wind, and happiness of the tongue, association with the women, that happiness. Oh, someone performs austerities and penances and gets all these things under control. All what is mentioned here. What are they? He is able to survive the heat, the cold, happiness, distress, hunger, thirst. These are our bodily problems, isn't it? When do we fall in life? When one of these takes over, isn't it? We want to fast on Ekadashi day. Decide to fast. By lunchtime, you're not able to survive. Immediately some nice prasadam comes, somebody brings, so here is some maha for you, Prabhu. it is prasadam, it's okay now. Ekadashi is finished there. So that shows, what does it show? It shows that the strength of the mind is so poor, that it's not able to survive that. So hunger. Similarly thirst. Similarly other things. Heat. When it gets hot, you think, oh, I wish we had an AC. We need AC for everything now, isn't it? Bus and the hotels, everything we need AC. So we need AC. That means when it is hot. When it is cold, we need... Is the heating not on? Inquiry starts there. So, like this, all these are our helpless situation with this material body, isn't it? But somehow or the other, we have performed a lot of penances and austerities and you manage to get control on all these things. In other words, you are not disturbed at all by these things, by hunger, by thirst, by cold, by heat, by wind, by rain, or by any of these things. Tongue, which is just one of the most difficult things, isn't it? Tongue, to control. When nice prasadam comes, we are not satisfied with simple food, we want some feast at that time. So we look for some opportunity to celebrate. Some Goswami's appearance will come. We will say, here that Goswami has appeared, let me have a big feast. We look for that opportunity. Something or the other. So, jihwa is the tongue. Tongue also we can't control. And of course, the last but the least, the most important one, the opposite sex, the relationship with the opposite sex. The sri sukham, as they are called here. So, all these things you have managed to get under control. But then it says here, Naranarayana Maharshi's case, it says here, such a person, he has managed to cross over all these things, but in spite of all that, suddenly something happened, he gets angry. And the comparison given here is, somebody has managed to cross over the sea by swimming across to the other side of the sea, but he got tripped and drowned in the small water that has come barked by the hoof of a calf. You know, the calf, when it walks, he makes a small mark on the ground. That's the hoof mark. In that, when it rains, some water falls in that. And in that water, suddenly sometimes you fall by trip or something and you get wet. It is like that. After having done and controlled all the other things, you couldn't control your anger. You couldn't control your anger. Imagine that. That you couldn't control your anger. And that is how this anger is. That you may have done everything else you have succeeded in controlling, but you couldn't control your anger at that particular point. So, Naranarayana Maharshi was an example in this thing, that when the celestial women from the heavenly planets danced, and when they all realized they could not disturb the mind of Naranarayana Maharshi, what did Narayana Maharshi do? Narayana Maharshi put his hand on his lap and slapped 2-3 times. And from the slapping of the thighs, born some women who were born at that time. And they were all much more beautiful than those who came from the celestial world, from the heavenly planets. They were much more beautiful than those who came from the heavenly planets. And Narayana Maharshi told them who came from the heavenly planets, because they were feeling ashamed seeing the beauty of those personalities who were born from the Narayana Maharshi's thighs. So he says to them, take one person, one of them from here, and take them with you back to the heavenly planets for Indra to associate with. And smilingly he replied this. And when they saw his smile, then they felt relieved. Otherwise, if it was Vishwamitra or Vasishtha or somebody else, they would have cursed them and made them to stay there as some stones for several years. So at least they said, we have escaped from that. And they all paid their obeisances immediately to Narayana Maharshi. And Narayana Maharshi did not ask all of them to go. Only the one who is the least beautiful among them. And she was Urvashi. Urvashi was the least beautiful among the women who were created by Narayana Maharshi. And that Urvashi was asked to go with them. Let Indra see me, my what I can do. See, let her see, let him see Urvashi. And then let Indra understand my situation. So Urvashi was asked to go with them to the heavenly planets. Urvashi went with them. This Urvashi will come later with Prajina Barhis. That story comes later in the Bhagavatam. So, Narayana Maharshi showed. You know that this Urvashi word is a very famous word, in the sense that, like you have in the West, Oscar awards given for the best actress and all that. Similarly, in India, they give this title as Urvashi Award for the best actress. But unfortunately, government of India has misunderstood. Urvashi is not the best among the women who were created by Narayana Maharshi. There were many others. Urvashi was the least beautiful among them. But whoever has taken this decision from the film board or the ministry, whoever has taken the decision, obviously did not understand the background. They only heard this word Urvashi and they put the word and stamped it and then issued it to the public. Every year they give this award as Urvashi Award to the Bollywood best actor or Bollywood best actress, in other words. They get this Urvashi Award. And so many years they have been going on now. Anyway, that's not important, but just in reference to Urvashi. So, Narayana Maharshi, his success was he controlled anger. And controlling the mind to such a degree, not getting disturbed under any circumstances, this is what is spoken in that verse. Drumala is saying this important thing, that Kshutralaltrikala gunama arida jaihya shaisniyam asmanapara jaladhi atitirya kejil krodhasayandi vibhalasya vasham padegor majjandi duscharadavascha vridhol srajandi. Duscharadavascha, very severe austerities and penances they have executed, and then they will vridhol srajandi, they fall down after that. They give up even that benefit what they have created, acquired from their austerities, and then they fall victimized by that. This is how he said like that. So, this is why Naranarayana Maharshi is important. His appearance is important in Drumila's discussion of various incarnations mentioned there. Narayana Maharshi's position is spoken like that. Now, after this, Drumila has spoken. We have come to what is known as Chamasokti. Chamasa is the next stage who was going to discuss. Well, so what was the question at that time? The question from King Nimi was, Bhagavad Dharmam, Krishna consciousness was the first question. The symptoms of a devotee was the second one, Kavi Hari. And then the third question was, what was Maya? And the fourth question was, how to cross over Maya? And then, what is the truth? Narayana, who is Narayana? That was answered. Then five. And then the sixth one was, Karmam. Karmam, that one should execute Karmam. In order to, the Karmam should be executed properly, in order that one can free oneself from this. Now, coming back to that Drumila, that is, I think, where we have stopped last time. Or probably we have started Chamasa. But before coming to Chamasa, there were a few more things to know, in that we spoke about certain things. Chamasa Vacha comes in the next one, in the fifth chapter. But in the in the fourth chapter itself, while concluding this incident with the different appearances, you will also notice that Drumila has spoken about various incarnations, and at the end he concludes there that evam vidhani karmani janmani cha jagalpade bhurini bhuriyashaso varnidani mahabhujam varnidani mahabhujam. And in the last verse, and prior to that, he said that Krishna will appear as what? Bhumer bharavadaranaye dushva janmam jata karishyadi surai api dushkarani. And then vader vimohayadi yajnikrutota darhan Shudran kalau, shidi bujau, nihani shadande. Shudran kalau, shidi bujau, nihani shadande. That verse is important because that is the verse where Lord Buddha is brought in. Lord Buddha's appearance is spoken there. Then Krishna will, you can see the way it's spoken in that verse is Buddha will appear, it says there. Buddha will, Krishna will appear as Buddha at that time. That means Buddha appeared 2,500 years ago. Isn't it? Lord Buddha appeared 2,500 years ago. 2,500 years before Lord Buddha appeared, Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. And that's why it is said like that, Buddha will appear. 2,500 years from now, Buddha will appear, and he will, vader vimohayati, by arguments, he will kill, by arguments, he will kill all those kings and those priests who are doing this sacrifices. Yajna krute kruto atadarhan shudran kalau kshiti bujo nihani shadande. And the end of Kaliyugam, he will come as Kalki and kill all the shudras, who will be all the kings who will be like shudras, and save this planet. That means 5,000 years ago, when Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken, it was already predicted. The appearance of Lord Buddha was spoken, predicted that 2,500 years from now Buddha will appear, and after another, later on, 2,500 years from then, later, much later, when Kalki's appearance is going to happen, that's also mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the greatness of those sages, that they could see things which were going to happen much, much later. Now, this verse has a connection with the Chamasa's reply also. We started talking about Chamasa, and Chamasokti it is called. Chamasokti. Chamasokti means Chamasa answering this question. What was Chamasa's question? Sorry, what was the question from King Nimi? King Nimi heard all these things. What? Kavi, Hari, Andarichan, Prabuddhan, Pippalayan, Avirhotra, and Drumilan. Seven sages have spoken several things. So at the end of this, Nimi got this doubt in his mind. If one does not follow this process, what is that process? Inquiry, surrendering to spiritual master, practicing Bhagavad Dharma, Krishna consciousness, and do not follow this route back to spiritual life, into the spiritual world, what will happen to such a person? That was his question. That means, what will happen to a non-devotee? A person who does not want to take to the process of spiritual life. In other words, someone who simply wants to live in this world and die like a cat or a dog without any benefit from this life, human life, what will happen to that person? This was the question from who? From King Nimi. See, you can see that question. Sri Raja Vajam, fifth chapter, first question. Bhagavandam harim prayo na bhajandhyalpa vittama tesham ashanda kamanam ka nishta avijidalpanam. Avijidalpanam. Avijidalpanam means one who did not control his mind And one who has no need, what will happen to them? Kanishta, what will be their situation? One who did not control his mind, tesham ashanda kamanam, that completely disturbed mind, continuously satisfying their senses. In other words, one who never controlled their senses, one who never controlled the activities of the mind, what will happen to such a person? And never took time to serve Krishna or to understand the truth and to realize the absolute truth. What will happen to such a person? This was the king's question. In answer to that, we have seen several verses we went through. Chamasu vacha mukhabahur vadebhya purushasya ashamai saha chatvaro jajnire varna gunai vipradaya prathaka. So Chamasamashi is answering, we have gone through all these things. Ya esham purusham sakshal alpa prabhamishwaram nabhajandya vajanandi sthanal drashta prabhadya patandhyada. Dure Harigada Kajil Dure Chachuda Girtana Sri Shudrales Chevat Enugambya Bhavadrisham Viprorajanya Vaishauja Hare Praptavadan Digam Shaudi Nijan Manadabi Mukhyam Damnaya Vadina Karmanya Kovidastabdham Urga Pandidamanina Vadandi Chadugan Mudha Yaya Madhua Girol Sugaha Rajasa Ghore Sangalpa Kamuga Himanyava Dambigamanina Paba Vihasandi Achuda Priyan Vadandidonyonya Upasita Striyo Griheshu Maithunya Pareshu Jashisha Ejandya Sashtan Avidhana Dakshanam Mruteyvaram Ghanandi Pashuna Dadvidam Shriya Vibhutya Vijayana Vidyaya Tyaga Nirubena Belena Karmana Jadasmayena Antadiya Saheshwaran Satyo Manyandi Hari Priyan Kala Sarvesha Shashatanubral Savastidam Yathaham Atmanam Abhishtam Ishwaram Vedobagidam Chana Shunode Budamanore Dhanam Pravadandi Vataya Loge Vivaya Misham Adyaseva Nityastu Jandor Nahi Tatra Chodana Vivastidisteshu Yuahayatna Sura Grahaira Asunavurtirishta. So that's where we stopped. Now, in these 11 verses, up to this, Chamasa Maharshi gave a very beautiful description there of those who come to spiritual life but don't take it seriously, who follow another path. Now, he has covered who is actually, are unable to execute spiritual life. The first person what was talked about was, the personality that was referred to was the the person who he is talking about here is the case of, first he talked about the women and the Shudras, isn't it? He spoke about that. Their inability in practicing spiritual life, totally, and the difficulties they have to go through, that he has mentioned in the first, second or third verse. He mentioned about that. And he also said that Krishna should be kind to them more because of their difficult situation where they are in. Krishna is also recognizes that fact, and he is more kind to them, more merciful to them for this reason. That Sri and Shudra. And the reason for that is that they have difficulties in many instances due to their relationship with the children, family, and strong attachment, not of attachment everywhere. It's not easy for them to break away from all that due to their relationships. So therefore, Sri Shudra Tulkada Vishravana Virahito Asatam De Dayarha. They deserve all the mercy from Krishna. Asatam De Dayarha. Krishna's mercy is on them. And this was spoken by Chamasa Maharshi also, that they deserve your special mercy for this reason. Sri Shudra Tulkada Vishravana Virahito Asatam De Dayarha. Why do they deserve that mercy? Because they have a lot of restrictions and limitations in their life due to their special situation. They are not so free to go and find a spiritual master to surrender, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from them, and so many other difficulties due to particular situations in life. Asadam de dayarha, and therefore tulpada sanayadan. Therefore, difficult for them to come to Krishna easily. Therefore, Krishna has to show special compassion to them. Dvija vulajanisho handa shojam ashandan. There is another category where Chamasa has caught them very strongly. And this is the category one has to be very careful about. It will be very, very careful about. They can destroy your spiritual life. Why? The reason is this. that Dvijakula Janusho Handa Shocham Yashandan. They somehow or the other managed to take birth in a Brahmana family or Dvijakula Janusho. It's not called Dvijakulam, it's called not Brahmana family. Why? Reason is this. That not that everyone who took birth as a Brahmana has the qualifications in them. But often you will find that they develop this nature of becoming a priest. And this happens in all situations. Or also, even if they are not born as Brahmana, sometimes in the society you find the tendency among people to become a priest, isn't it? And once they become a priest, normally what happens is they develop this attitude towards others that we are qualified people. That's why I am the priest. I am the priest in the society. You should listen to me. And they start manipulating others. Because of this, the whole religion process, instead of becoming spiritual, it becomes a religion. You can see this. Right in front of your eyes, this happens. But you don't notice it. Why? You take that as authority. They are so clever in manipulating things. They are so especially, and Chamasa Maharshi, obviously, this was happening at that time. This happens in Hinduism, this happens in Christianity, this happens in every other religion. Why priests are hated so much? Because they take that position. There is no spirituality in them. What they have got with them is, they have learned to manipulate the society in the way they want it. They are the people who are responsible for the situation, what has happened to the women, what has happened to the Shudras. How in Varnashram Dharma, nowhere Krishna says that Brahmana is superior to Shudra. The four divisions has come from four parts of the Krishna's body. And not only it has come like that, it's also said that all four are necessary in the society. So how come one came higher than the other? And where did this begin from? This is all manipulation of this priestly society, priestly community. They have done this so well that life after life, they are capable of manipulating the society in this way. They have no spiritual understanding of things. What they have done, due to their Dvijakula Janisho Handa Shocham Yashandan Vrityartham Teya Jandi. Just for surviving in this world, they are willing to utilize spiritual life for that purpose. Vrityartham Teya Jandi Bahukaditamabi Tuam Anagarnayando. That they have, even if you tell them, they will not. They will not listen to Srimad Bhagavatam. They will not listen to Bhagavad Gita. But they will be there in the front to sort out all your spiritual problems. These are the people who does that. This priestly class. Somehow or the other, Chamasa Maharshi caught on them at the very point. That's why in the Bhagavatam, when Chamasa Maharshi is answering these questions, he says that they are the biggest problem. This, and once they take over, this group of people, they take over, they will spoil others' spiritual life as well. Because purpose of everything, priestly activities also is not the goal of life, to remain as a priest whole life in front of everybody else. Is that the goal? No. Bhagavad Gita doesn't say that. Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't say that. Purpose of spiritual life is to realize the self. That is the goal of everything. If you are not getting there and not going in that direction, all the other so-called rituals and spiritualistic, all the activities of the priestly activities, what good is there from that? What good is going to come out of that? So, Chamasa Maharshi wants in advance to be aware of this. Obviously, this must have been happening then also in his time. Otherwise, why should he mention that? Or the time when Bhagavatam was spoken by Vedavyasa or so there Goswami's time. This must have been definitely there. And they always do this, that they have this in there, because first thing, they have a high position in the society, they take that position, they manipulate the situation. And then they say, Vidya Abhijatyai, Abhijatyai, we are Brahmanas, we are qualified, so we are the only ones who have to instruct others. Secondly, they also studied the Shastram. They have studied the Shastram, but they didn't understand it. What was the goal of studying all the scriptures? They didn't understand. They wanted to use the Shastram, and they want to stay in comfortably in that situation. So, the Tva Vidya Vijatye Kimina Vidhadade Tadrishamma kritha maam. Please don't make me one like that. That is what. Even if you make me anything else in this world, even if you make me a non-devotee, don't make me one among them. This is the message. So, here, in the case of our Chamasa Maharshi's discussions, what you find here, that he has warned against it very carefully, not to be affected by that. They are not anyway can help you in spiritual life, because they don't know what is spirituality means. They don't know what spirituality means because they have used to this exploitation in the society, and then they are honored by the society. People, ordinary people, do not know these things. They become victimized by that. They think, oh, he's the priest, so I shall have to listen everything what he says. And he will say something, he may not have any spiritual realization, nor he has any proper austerities or penances in his life he has performed. So, obviously, still he takes over the control, or he takes the position as the teacher to the society. And that does not help the seeker of the truth. One who is searching the truth, he is not helped by that. So, that's why in the Bhagavadam, when Chamasa Maharshi spoke about this, he has warned about that very, very seriously. And he says there that sometimes he talks about this priest so heavily. He even says that loge vivayamisham adya seva nityasya jandorna hi tatra chodana vivasthitisteshu vahayatyam suragrahirasa nivrtirishta. These are the people who actually twist everything to suit their purpose. They twist everything to suit their purpose. They will even say that, look, I am a priest, so I got to get married, and to maintain my family I need the money, and everything should be provided for because I am the priest. This is the answer to that. So, and they will twist everything. Oh, marriage is necessary because unless you are married and you have a nice big family, how can we carry on? That's what Krishna has done, that's what Ramchandra has done. All these kind of answers they'll bring forth from the Shastram in order to support their sense gratification. And they can degrade to any extent. That's also mentioned there. Loge vivayamisham adya seva yatrosta nityasya jandorna hi tatra chodana vivasthitisteshu vivahayajnam suragrahaira asunivrtirishtam. You can see many verses before that he is referring to these people. But then the question will come, that Trivarnikam, normally Trivarnikam means Brahmana, Kshatriya and Vaishya. It is among them that most of the priests also come from that, isn't it? So how come Chamasa Maharshi has spoken about that? After all, Vasudev, Srinarada Maharshi, Parishit Maharaj, Sukadev Goswami, they are all from the Kshatriya community, isn't it? They are all Kshatriyas. No, everybody is not covered in that. He is only talking about those who have taken spiritual life as an occupation and misleading others. It's them he is targeting at. Not that everyone is in that category. Those who take spiritual life as an occupation and use it to make a comfortable living in this world, they have been targeted at. And that Chamasa Maharshi has not left them. He has caught them at the very right point and told them that beware of them. They cannot help you in spiritual life. And you will also see from now on, several verses he is only talking about that. Dhanam ja dharmai ghabalam yado vai jnanam savijnanam anuprashandi griheshi yunjandi kaleberasya mrityam napashyandi durandavirium. Verse number 12. That's where we stopped last time. So, let's look at that. Dhanam ja dharmai ghabalam yado vai jnanam savijnanam anuprashandi. See, griheshu yunjandi kaleberasya mrityam napashyandi durandavirium. Mrityam napashyandi durandavirium. That he says here that they are only saying that making money in this world is the only goal. Everything else is only to maintain my life in this world. And jnanam savijnanam anuprashandim, they don't have any direct experience of the truth. They have no realizations, in other words. And whenever they acquire wealth, what do they do with the wealth? Wealth is used for maintaining the family. In other words, wealth is not meant for that purpose. If you are a spiritual personality, if you have proper spiritual training or spiritual realizations on these issues, one knows very well the wealth belongs to Krishna. And the wealth is to be used for Krishna's service, not for my family life, family, you have to provide whatever that is there for them to maintain the very minimum things. But simply increasing the sense gratification of the family cannot be the goal of life. That is not the money is meant for. That's why he's saying here that griheshu yunjandi kalebarasya mrityam na pasyandi durandaviryam. They will not see that the thing called death, which is waiting at the doorstep, he will not see that. Mrityam na pasyandi durandaviryam. Rather, he will be very satisfied in using the so-called falsely acquired wealth in maintaining the family, and at the same time use that position to exploit others in their life. So here, important thing to realize is this, that then only when the money is used for maintaining one's own body and for one's own family, that money is not the proper utilization of the wealth. Because that to serve Krishna is money is meant for. And money is used in that direction, that normally in the circumstances when one has not acquired transcendental knowledge, say one is in the karmi world, simply working and earning money, and if he is thinking that this money is only for sense gratification, for my life, then he is called in the Ishvanishad, if you look, you will find a very heavy verse there. Asurya namade loga andhena tamasavrida. It says that person has to go to Asura Logam. Asurya Namade Loga. The Logam where world he has to go to is Asura Logam. How is it like? Andhena Tamasavrada. It is covered in darkness completely. Because he has lived a life like that. He has to do that. He has to go for that. You see, that is why earlier, if you remember, in Kali Yugam particularly, this is more important. Why? In Kali Yugam, these things have become priority, isn't it? What? Maintaining family and looking after one's bodily comforts. No other age has had this problem like in Kali Yugam. And this struggle becomes worse day after day. And no matter how much energy you spend on that, it's never enough. And still you are short of money. Still you are short of bodily needs, bodily comforts. And again you are struggling, and it's endless. So because of this, one of the reasons why it is like that is, many of the people who come to Kali Yugam are coming from the hellish planets. After experiencing enough in the hellish planets, after executing a lot of hellish activities, gone through hellish planets, and from their hellish planets, they are again coming back to human body. And that is why, when they come to human body, that demands of the human body, and the realizations in human body is so poor, that they are finding so much attachment to the material body, and maintenance of the material body, and bodily extensions. Is coming from there. That's why in Kali Yugam, everything becomes very difficult. This mentality of terrorism, where is it coming from? It's brought with him, because when he left hellish planets, it has not gone away from him. The punishment in hellish planets don't take away all these things. That was explained in the second canto itself. Sukadeva Goswami said to Parikshit, isn't it? That what did he say? Manye kunjara shaujavad, he says. All these austerities and penances and punishment will not help a person to get rid of the vasanas inside. Vasanas will come with him. So after going through hellish planets and all, when he comes back to this earthly planet, he brings with him all that vasanas also. Terrorist vasana or whatever vasana he has got. He comes with that. And that this is why straight away he enters into this. Otherwise, why is that happening to people? Some people in that way. This is because of this, that vasanas has not left him. Vasanas has followed him with that. So, in order that we feel relieved from all that things, one has to first purify through Krishna consciousness. That's why Sri Sukadeva Goswami said to Parikshit at that time, Kejil kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana akham dhunvandikarsnyena Niharamiva Bhaskara. That is the only thing you can do, he says to Parikshit. He said, because Parikshit said that by getting punished a lot of time, what is the use, he said. Parikshit said to Sukadeva Goswami, suppose I've done something wrong. A lot of things went wrong in my life. I did a lot of wrong things. And you have taken me to task and punished me a lot. But that's all right. I got punished. But the vasana has not gone away from me. That a tendency to commit sinful life, sinful activities has not left me. They are still with me. So what to do? It is at that time, Sudeva Goswami said to him, Kejil kevalaya bhaktya. Some people, they don't worry about all these things. About sinful life, or all the pious life, this, that and the other. They don't bother what has happened in their previous life. What did they do? They did only one thing. What did they do? Kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana. They simply took shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. That's what they did. They didn't do anything else. They said, whatever that has happened in the past, I can't do anything about it. What can I do? There's so many things that happened in this life. What all I have done in my past life, I don't even know what I have done. All I know is I am suffering. So, for me, the right solution now is, Sudeva Goswami says, Kejil kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana. They simply surrendered to Krishna and said to Krishna that, please take care of me. I can't do anything more than this. This is all I can do. I can surrender unto you. That's all I can do. Akham dunvandikasneena. By doing that way, Krishna said, alright, you have surrendered to me. At least you have done this thing. Niharam iva bhaskara. That just like when the sun shines in the morning and there was heavy fog, when the fog gets cleared up by the powerful sun that comes through, similarly, by their very Krishna consciousness, all that propensities in them or the strong vasanas in them to commit sinful activities have just disappeared from them. That is the power of Krishna consciousness. That is why Sudeva Goswami says there, that by taking to the process of Krishna consciousness, you are not only getting freed from the sinful reactions of your past activities, but you are even getting rid of the very vasanas in you by the process of Krishna consciousness. So powerful is that process of chanting the holy name. So here, in the same way, we also have to realize when Shyamasa Maharshi says these things, that why has he spoken that these things like that? That the goal should not move. You should not move the goalpost. Having taken to spiritual life, always we have to be focused on one point, that the ultimate goal is to go back to Krishna, to understand what is Krishna, what is our relationship with Him. If this is not understood and realized, all our so-called deity worship, so-called chanting, everything is not taking us to the goal at the end. And that is why if the goal has to be always very much focused. We have to be focused on the goal. Not only that, even while speaking about, if you look into the previous verses, the Bhagavatam words are so powerfully selected, so carefully selected. You will see there was a statement a few verses before. It says here that, I think it was in the case of, if you look into Avirhotra statement, that was in the 3rd chapter, verse 44. Avirhotra verse 44, 3rd chapter. There we talked about this. Parauchavado vedoyam balana manishasanam. Karma mokshaya karmani vidhate hyagadam yatha. That's very important. Karma mokshaya karmani, it says. Karma mokshaya karmani. In other words, sometimes people find it very hard to accommodate this in their mind. Karma mokshaya karmani. Using karmam to get out of karmam. You see? Using karmam to get out of karmam. Karma mokshaya karmani adate vyagadam yada. It says there. So, this is why, where it was discussed at that time, we talked about these two processes. What were the processes? Vaidigam and Tandrigam. The two processes. Kriyayogam was spoken at that time, isn't it? Avirhotra spoke about Kriyayogam. What was discussed there, we also saw that there are two systems of worshipping Krishna. One is called the process of Vaidigam, based on Vedam. Vedam means based on the mantras. The other one is what is known as Tandrigam, which is in other words what is called as Tandram. Mandram and Tandram, two things. Vaidigam and Tandrigam. So almost all the worship, what we do serve Krishna, falls into one of these categories. One of these two categories. For example, Vaidika means when you perform Vedic sacrifices, which we talked about earlier, that we have Agnishtomam, Adhiratram, Vajabeyam. There is an endless list of them. And these sacrifices are meant to please Krishna. Now, there is a little bit we have to go into this side also to understand about it. Whenever we talked about Vedic sacrifices, you will know that in Vedic sacrifices, everything is offered into the fire, isn't it? Everything is offered into the fire. Ghee, for example, ghee, rice, all different kinds of grains, the fruits, everything is offered into the fire, and they are offered along with that we chant the Vedic mantras and they are offered into the fire. Now, when does it become tantrikam? It becomes tantrikam when instead of offering into the fire, you are offering it to Krishna and then accepting it as prasadam. You see the difference between Vaidikam and tantrikam? In Vaidikam, everything is offered into the sacrifice, into the fire. Plenty of ghee is thrown into the fire, along with the Vedic mantras, to please Krishna. That is also part of the process, Vedic process of pleasing Krishna through the Vedic sacrifices, fire sacrifices. All the grains, vegetables, and so many expensive things, food quantity is put into the fire, which cannot be used again. On the other hand, in the Tantriya system, it is not so. Where we offer everything to Krishna and accept it back as prasadam. We take it as prasadam. That is the Tantriya Vidhi. In almost all the temples, the worship process is Tantriya. For example, our process also is Panjaratriya Vidhi. Panjaratriya Vidhi is the Tantriya process of worship. So the Vaidiyam and Tantriyam, two processes. The goal of both is not to do this whole lifetime, Vaidiyam and Tantriyam, and be busy with that. That's not the goal. There is a point at which one has to come out of that. And that is also what is mentioned there. Karmana karma narharam. That with karma, how to get out of karma. That is what is spoken there. How do you get out of karma? While executing these processes, whether it is Vaidikam or Tantrikam, if the person who is executing it is in the right consciousness, in other words, I am just a tool doing this because Krishna has engaged me in this service. In that understanding, if he does that, without expecting any results from that, if he does it, in other words, without any worship, what is done for Krishna, without expectation of any results, and with that proper understanding that Krishna has engaged me in this, allowed me to do this service and engage me in this service. In other words, without any identity with the as the doer and the enjoyer, it becomes karma yoga. So these two processes, Vaidikam and Tantrikam, these two processes will become karma yoga when it is executed in this consciousness. And at some point in time, if it is executed properly, at some point in time, it will purify the person to such a degree that he can come out of it. He doesn't have to do it anymore. Now, will anyone come and tell you, now that you are released from this, and give you a release note at that time? No, that's not how it happens. The way it happens is that by executing this Vaidikam and Tantrika Karmam, a stage will come in life in such a way that karma will not be anymore binding that person. In other words, chitta shuddhi will happen. Person's heart will get so purified that he will not act in a selfish way anymore in life. No more selfish interest. All Krishna's interest. And automatically, when that stage happens, you will withdraw from this worship also. Then there is no more need to do all these things. That's what Chamsamarshi is pointing out there. You don't need to continue doing this. Some people, they think that sitting down in the temple and doing deity worship throughout life is the goal. That is not the goal. That is only to purify us from this contamination. Why? Because our karma is impure. We have created impure contamination in our own consciousness, and we have to free ourselves from that. And therefore, this deity worship process is there. It is only a tool to come out to that. And any great devotees, you will see, they establish temples and run them. Why? For the benefit of others. They don't need it anymore. When Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and all the other great personalities, when they established the temples, they were not doing it because they wanted to serve the deity. That was not the goal behind it. That was on the larger interests of the society, in order to help the other people. Because already they have realized it. What is there for them to realize? Already seeing Krishna in every living entity, seeing the relationship with Krishna, and having seen Krishna directly, would you go after the deity after that? There is no need for that, isn't it? It is just like this. You have to take the medicine when you are ill. But after you are cured the illness, do you have to take the medicine again? There is no need to take the medicine after you are cured the illness, isn't it? So similarly, in the Chamasamashi is saying there, that this Tandriyavidhi process and also the process of Vaidhyam is all only up to a limit to purify your karma. That is what that two words mentioned there, karmana, karma nurharam, isn't it? To free yourself from karma and the effect of karma, because this is the biggest problem in our spiritual life. That is what is causing the difficulty. When chitta shuddhi is not there, when the purity is not there, knowledge won't come. Knowledge won't manifest. Simply it is like that. The knowledge won't manifest so long as there is no purity inside. And purity begins with this status when one acquires that status what he was spoken here that we have seen before that Avihotra, I think, who spoke that. When Karma Yogam was discussed, he said, Karma Mokshaya Karmani. Karma Mokshaya Karmani. How to escape from karma with karma. Using karma to escape from karma. You see, Karma Mokshaya Karmani Vidate Hagadam Yada. So if you start keep on thinking that, this is the goal now, I become a pujari, whole life I'll be a pujari, that's it. Nothing more. That is not the end. The journey is not finished yet. This is there only for this purpose. To purify yourself, you have to execute deity worship. Deity worship has to be executed in the right frame of mind, without anticipating any benefits from that, simply doing it as a duty, and done without any profit or motive behind it, and with full sincerity, with the hope that Krishna is allowing me to do it, engaging me in that service. Only if it is done in that way, that deity worship will benefit the person. Otherwise, it will just go on, life after life, deity worship. You can sit in front of the deity life after life, nothing will happen. The results has to come from this. That is why this is a shastram, this is a science. And the great sages who have developed this science and technology for that, they know at what stage what is required. And what stage you have to leave them behind also. Karma mokshaya karmani adate vigadam vidate hagadam yada, he says. Karma mokshaya karmani, you have to release yourself from karma. Karma means the thing what is binding all of us in this world, isn't it? So many lifetimes, did so many different kinds of karma, acquired so much sinful reactions from that, and on that I am experiencing the material body is experiencing happiness, distress in this world. I am doing more karma, accumulating more results from that, more bondage from that. So in order to come out of that, anyone who has come to spiritual life at some point should execute karma yogam to some degree and purify himself in order that the spiritual knowledge will develop inside. It's a mandatory requirement for anyone, whether he is a jnani, whether it's a yogi, whether it's a bhakta, or whether it's a karmi. He has to follow through this. That's why Chamasamahiji was spoken like that. Now, what else does he has to know? He also has to know Nashwaram Karma Nurmidam. This whole creation has come from karma. Karma Nurmidam, it says there in that two verses before that. It is all temporary, everything is temporary, and everything is, this whole creation has happened because of karma. Nashwaram Karma Nurmidam. And when one is conscious of that, he will not act in the wrong way also. Now, out of those three things, karmam, akarmam, vikarmam, we have seen those three, isn't it? In Bhagavad Gita, we discussed that. Karmam is that one, what you do when you have to, what is as per your injunctions, Vedic injunctions, what you are executing. Akarmam means not doing anything. Not doing anything. Now, by akarmam, the chances are that you will not go up or you will not go down. You will stay where you are. But karmam, if it is executed as a karma yogam, you will progress spiritually. On the other hand, if you execute vikarmam instead of karmam and akarmam, what will happen is you will go down. You will go down. See how strongly karmam controls us at every step in life. That's why Krishna spoke about karmam in detail in Bhagavad Gita. A lot in detail in Bhagavad Gita. Somehow or the other in the Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna doesn't talk about karmam so much. Very little reference to karmam. Reason for that is Krishna knows that whatever he has to talk about karmam is already mentioned there in the Bhagavad Gita. And those who wants to come back to Krishna, they will go through Bhagavad Gita first very well and understand the message clearly and follow from there. And therefore, in Bhagavadam, when it comes to Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna talks to Uddhava mostly in relationship with Jnanam and Bhakti. Jnanam and Bhakti. Whatever it is, here what we have to remember now is Chamasa Maharshi has warned very, very seriously about those who are in that situation. Now, going back to the next verse, Dhanam Jadharma Ekabalam Yado Vai. Jnanam Savit, verse number 12. Dhanam Jadharma Ikhavalam Yadho Vai. Jnanam Savit Jnanam Anuprashandi. Griheshu Yunjandi Kale Varasya. Mrityumna Pashyandi Durandaviryam. That, you see, why is it said that the senses have to be controlled? Because if the senses are not controlled, if the desires for sense gratification stays, you will not understand what is the truth, what the truth is. Illusion will overpower us. Illusion will overpower us. Therefore, the desire for increasing the happiness of the body and sense gratification has to come to an end. And when it comes to an end, when one, somehow or the other, fortunate enough to study Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, and by the mercy of Krishna, somehow or the other, he gets an opportunity to hear from the spiritual master about the glories of the truth behind everything, and he develops what is known as Paroksha Jnanam. Paroksha Jnanam means that knowledge he develops within his head. In his head. After studying the books, after hearing also from the spiritual master, from Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, whatever he has heard, or the Upanishads, what he acquires a certain degree of knowledge which stays in his head. That is called Paroksha Jnanam. It has only come to that level yet. What happens after that is, he becomes a little bit peaceful within himself because this knowledge has come to him. So, somehow or the other, the knowledge that has gone in starts showing its potency. The knowledge shows its potency. That afterwards, the mind that was going after sense gratification will now stop. Will now stop. And that is the point you can say, that practically all what you have studied and understood theoretically is having its impact on you. This is how it is understood. That when you study books or when you hear things from different people, from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, and all that knowledge you have got in your mind, on your head, from Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, if it is making you to withdraw from sense gratification, not to run after sense happiness, not to run after material happiness, at that point you can notice that knowledge is helping you to withdraw from the external world. It is then that the mind starts looking inwards. Our look start going inwards. Inward looking, you become inward looking. Otherwise, constantly searching after sense enjoyment and sensual happiness in this world, it is not possible to develop spiritually. It will never happen. It will all become a show. And at the end, you will be where you are in the beginning. So you have done so many things, but nothing has happened. Why? Paroksha Jnanam, the knowledge that has gone in, did not become Aparoksha Jnanam. Or in other words, it was confusing. The person has not experienced the peace within himself. That now, in the next verse, that is verse 13, Again, Chamsa Maharshi is saying that it is important to give up sense gratification. People often ask this question that, oh, Krishna consciousness is a nice process. Compared to yogis, jnanis and all that, there's a lot of opportunity for sense gratification, even in Krishna consciousness. They find, therefore, Krishna consciousness is an attractive process. Some people have said this. They find that in Krishna consciousness, we have nice prasadam, we can sing nice music, we can dance together, and so many nice things. And we can go on holidays in the name of parikramam, and we can go to so many holy places, and there also we can live in 5-star hotels and get prasadam there. We are only eating prasadam, nothing else. But life, what a wonderful life I have. Yeah? Everything wonderful. So the whole process is so nice, but that person is not going to make much progress spiritually. That means that person, what he has done, he has somehow or the other managed to bring 4 regulative principles into his life. That's fine. But sense gratification has not stopped. It's still going on. So in the next verse, Chamsa Maharshi is saying there that it is absolutely mandatory to give up sense gratification. Why? Because if you don't do that, he said, it will trap you at the end. It will trap you in there. Then, only when you have given up sense gratification, that realization of the soul start building up inside. And that freedom from sense gratification is necessary in order to realize the soul. It's a requirement. And that is sodharmam. That is dharmam. So, in the next words, have a look. Yad ghana bhaksho vihida suraya sthathapasho alabhanam nahimsa evam vivaya prajaya naratya imam vishuddham naviduswadharmam. He has spoken very strongly in that words. Yad ghana bhaksho vihida suraya sthathapasho alabhanam nahimsa. You know, this priestly class of people, at least the devotees, they don't go to such a degree. Devotees satisfied with some good prasadam and a nice place to sleep and a little bit of opportunity to gossip. And if they get it, they're satisfied. Devotees are satisfied. That's good. But there are little smarter people than that, even devotees also. There are more smarter ones. They will say that are the people who is referring to here. Yad grana bhaksho vihida surayam stadho pasho alabhanam na himsa. You know, when these people, particularly Chamsa Maharshi is referring to 2 categories. You have to remember that. One is referring to the kings, and the other one, he is referring to the priests who are assisting those kings. These two together, the kings and the priests together, what they did was, they started the sacrifices, Vedic sacrifices. And then they realized, if we perform sacrifices, we can drink. Because there are so many sacrifices mentioned, Sautramani, we talked about that. You can perform the sacrifices and you can have a drink. And then, killing the animal, eat the meat also. So meat eating and drinking alcohol is an opportunity there, if you perform sacrifices. So this kept on growing. Because human tendency is to have all these things, isn't it? Not to have just prasadam and be satisfied. So, when they started doing these things, it came to such a degree that simply killing animals in the name of sacrifice and pleasing the Supreme Lord became the business. And that is when Lord Buddha came. Lord Buddha had to stop it. Krishna had to stop it. So, he came and he told them that what they were doing was the himsa. That's why it said there, sthathapasho alabhanam nahimsa. Alabhanam. Alabhanam means, you'll see there, that with mantram properly offering that is necessary, but not killing animals without any discrimination, just like what is going on nowadays. Simply killing animals in the slaughterhouses and utilizing it and thinking that, and they are all very intelligent, supposed to be very intelligent people who are doing this, who are eating it. They all have big degrees, big jobs and big factories and big institutions. Huh? But their consciousness is like this. So, when the priestly class and the kings, they started colluding together and they started engaging in these activities, Buddha had to come. Lord Buddha had to come and he had to put a stop to it. some of these sacrifices, if you get to know them closely, you will know how sinful it is. There is one sacrifice, and the purpose of this sacrifice, you have to also remember, is not to engage in these sinful activities. For example, let us take for example, Putragamishti. Dasharatha Maharaj performed Putragamishti. You see in the Bhagavadam, also in the Ramayanam it is there. Similarly, Putragamishti is mentioned in the for Chitrakedus, a pastime also. You will see Anga. Anga Maharaj, I think, performed Putragamishti to have a child. But the purpose of Putragamishti or Vayavyam, another sacrifice, for example, for opulence, material opulence, all these things, people started misunderstanding. Purpose of these sacrifices is not to get something. Not to get children is Putragamishti. Putragamishti is not meant for that. Basically what happens is, if these sacrifices are executed properly, this desire for children will go away from inside. That's how it works. Putragamishti is meant for that. In order to take away that desire from us and purify our mind. Because all these kind of desires, what is in us, is basically impurities inside, isn't it? Desire for material opulences, desire for family life and happy, comfortable family life, children, bodily extensions. If you are intelligent, you will know that all this is only binding me in this place. Nothing is helping me except that I work like an asshole life to keep this whole thing going. This is all what my spiritual life is becoming now. So, intelligent thing is one can withdraw from all this in the very beginning and not get caught up in that. But having got caught up in at least some point in time, one has to come to senses and think that is this all what life is all about? But rather becoming serious in spiritual life and free oneself from that. So, the sacrifices are basically meant in order to get rid of that desire from inside by executing this particular Putragamishti, one get rid of that desire from himself. By executing Vayavyam, he gets himself free from that desire for material opulences. So everything is linked to something. Everything is very paroksham, direct, indirectly spoken also. So similarly, when we are talking about the Vedic sacrifices, you have to always remember the purpose is karmaya karma mokshani. In order to free oneself from karmam, all this karmam is done. But in due course, what happened was, people started thinking, I'll perform sacrifices, I'll have loads of children. I'll perform that sacrifice, I'll have lot of material opulences. Like this, they started using the sacrifices for their sense gratification. And that is what Chamasamaharshi is criticizing there. You see, when does karma mokshaya karmani, when does you know that? When a bald person, whose head is bald, there's little bit hair left in the hair. There's little bit hair left in the head. It starts falling off one after the other. What do? Do you take that back and fix it again, put it back on the same place? No. You know, that stage has come, I have to leave it behind. Similarly, karmam is also like that. Karma mokshaya karmani. We have to get out of karmam. Karmam is the thing that is binding us. And you can't keep on doing this karmam all along the life and think that this is the goal of my life. And you will neither get anywhere. It will be like the story of Prajina Barhis in the fourth canto. What did Prajina Barhis do? Prajina Barhis was performing sacrifice after sacrifice. And one day, he killed so many animals in that sacrifice. He was doing everything very legitimately. Don't get me wrong. He was doing everything legitimately. But what happened to him? He thought, this is the goal of life, performing sacrifice. And similarly, we can also think that this deity worship is the goal of life, nothing else. Or that some other project I have started, that's the goal of life. None of this is the goal of life. Goal of life is Krishna. Going back home, back to Krishna. Spiritual self-realization, that's the goal. These are things which comes on the way to be taken and to be left at a particular point in time. So, if that's not happening, sometimes have you noticed, I don't know, sometimes people, they have deity worship at home. And they'll have a room for the worshipping the deity. initially there will be only one deity. Then they may go to some holy places here and there, and they will find something attractive there. They'll bring that also into the deity room. After about 10 or 15 years, deity worship is started. The room is full of deities and full of photographs and full of paraphernalia, and the whole room is packed with things. And they are still sitting there doing deity worship night after day. So what can you do when they have not understood what Chamsamashi is saying here? And they are simply caught in this process. That means they got caught up in the process. They didn't get to the goal. Process itself became the goal at the end. That's what has happened. So all these things happens due to the priests. They did do this job very well. They guide the people. Come on, come every day to the temple, offer this and sit there, listen to me, what I am saying. Don't do anything, that's enough. He is satisfied, the visitor is also satisfied, they both go home. Neither of them get anywhere at the end. This is why spiritual knowledge has to be always spoken about, always to be discussed. Srimad Bhagavatam, what the great sages have to say, what Sukadeva Goswami has to say on this. They are our guidelines. They are our guides in spiritual life because they have realized the self and not those who are sitting and guiding you in the how to do the sacrifice. They cannot help you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We will discuss next Sunday. Yeah.